roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. Getting ready to have a great show. We have two guests. One of them's already there, as you can see him. His name is Eric Nixick, general manager at Extreme Couture and also one of the best coaches in the sport of mixed martial arts. He's the co-coach of the year for 2020 on MMA Junkie. And, of course, you saw him this past weekend in the corner of Francis Ngannou as Francis Ngannou claimed the undisputed heavyweight title in the UFC. He defeated Stipe Miocic. Eric will be with us for the early part of this show, so we're not going to even have our formal intro or anything like that. But I do want to give a shout-out to Misha Tate. She'll be joining us as well. 9:20 p.m. Pacific, 12:20 p.m. Eastern. She'll be our second guest. We'll unpack that card. But right now, let's get to it. We have a new champion in Francis Ngannou. And, Eric, you are right there with him, man. You've been riding with this guy for the last couple years, and you guys made history on Saturday night.
We did it, George. We did it, man. Yeah, what a ride. What a journey. You know, it couldn't happen to a better guy. You know, he believed in the process. He understood what he had to put in to get where we got. And, you know, and I think now the real work begins starting Monday, starting today.
Well, for crying out loud, let's enjoy this one. Oh, man. You got a vacation coming up. But you know what's funny is usually the media says what you say. So Francis will sit down and we'll go, what's next? You know, and the fighter's like, I just fucking won. Let me enjoy this one, you know? And yeah. Here you already got the mentality of the work starts on Monday because, yeah, people are going to be gunning after Francis, John Jones, Derek Lewis, Alexander Volkov, maybe even Stipe Miocic alone. But we'll get to that in just a second, get your thoughts. You're part of the team. But going back to Saturday, first things first, the walkout, what was the final thing you remember saying to him? Maybe it was in the embrace or maybe it was during the walkout. What did you guys exchange before, you know, he was getting set to jump into the octagon?
You know, it was a undeniable feeling that we felt that the universe had already written this for us, that we just knew we had to go out and execute the game plan. And the title was a formality. We're just going to go pick it up and collect it. So we just, everything was calm, man. I mean, everything was calm, you know, all the coaching staff, Francis, the mentality was all the same wavelength. You know, one guy wasn't nervous. One guy wasn't over excited or stepping outside the comfort zone. We were just calm, cool, collect, man. And, you know, I just gave him a big old hug, told him I loved him. And, you know, this was his destiny. Just to go pick it up, go collect it. That was really it. But for the most part, everything was just smooth.
Glad you said the word calm, because that's exactly what I was thinking, was how calm he was, how disciplined he was, how patient he was. Because when he came out, he landed some early strikes where, well, first of all, Francis didn't just come out like a track star, like Usain Bolt. He usually comes out very, very fast, but this time he kind of eased into it. He knew he had to go five rounds, but at the same time, he gets an early strike. I think it hit Miocic behind the head. And, you know, some of these sharks, man, they smell blood and they go for it. But I think he knew, well, that's not just a little catfish I'm going after. That's another shark. So I got to, you know, bide my time. What was it like in the Apex that it was quiet where you guys could communicate? And what was it like for you watching your athlete, you know, bide his time and take his time and not just all of a sudden go into these bursts?
Well, that's all by design. So you nailed it on the head, because if our corner from the walkout, from the locker room, from in the corner when the fight's going on, if we are nervous and yelling and screaming and making our fighter not calm and come out of that game plan, we're doing ourselves a disservice. So, you know, we spoke about that, that how important it was. Like, I didn't want a bunch of guys yelling. You know, even Usman for a minute there was like, ah, and I was like, hey, nothing. Don't just let me talk. You know what I mean? Just because we wanted to keep that same measured approach. Because if one guy starts going crazy and yelling something, then you reflect that onto your fighter. So it was very important for us to all kind of just remain calm and keep that focus. Our main priority, we had it broken down like an outline, like systematic of what we wanted to, how we wanted to approach this fight. And number one was cage control. Get in the cage, apply dominance, keep center of that cage, and everything else will fall into place as the game plan kind of unfolded. And that's exactly what he did. He listened to everything that we had to do. And that's kind of how you start that, see that snowball effect and the ball roll, because it was like that, you know, you scheme your first 10 plays in football and that first play went for 35 yards.
Love it. Love the football reference. All right. So now let's get to a few things that I wanted to ask you as far as what happened in the first fight. Could, you know, how was it going to unfold in the second and how you guys addressed it? Because even though this is no secret, you're a good friend of the show, you're a good friend of Goz and I, when it comes to that type of stuff, that's stuff that stays internal with you. So now we get to ask you, and maybe you can divulge some and maybe you can't, because obviously these game plans, some of it carries over. But in the first fight, what hurt Francis a lot was cardio. And I think that's something he's honestly started to answer in these fights between the first fight with Miocic and this last fight. But that was one. And then two was wrestling, you know, takedown defense, all that. Man, he was on point with wrestling because he stopped that one takedown. And not only did he stop it, he had a really nice sprawl technique, you know. And he did a quick Lance Palmer-esque type back take. Mm-hmm. And was very efficient with his strikes. But then again, when that moment wasn't for him, just like that first strike we talked about, he backed out and it looked like it was calm Francis. You know what I mean? So he was probably addressing that energy bar. But can you talk about that work in the wrestling and in the cardio department that you guys addressed here for Francis Ngannou?
Well, you know, he's talked about not liking to watch that first fight. And I think that's fair if he doesn't want to watch it, but that's my job, right? Like, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this to you guys. You can ask my wife. I watch that fight every night before bed. The Stipe and Francis fight, number one. I watch it every night before bed since January. It might be a little bit overdoing it. Probably was. But that's just my nature, and I like to try to formulate the best game plan possible. I like to look at patterns. I like to look at mannerisms. Every little thing, every little nuance, I just wanted to make sure that I had an understanding of who and what Stipe Miocic was and what type of fighter he is. He deserved that respect. So, you know, it was kind of our job as the coaching staff to take that information and apply it to our skill set in Francis. And, you know, I got to give so much credit to Dennis and Nate and those guys that run that wrestling room. You know, those guys ran those practices, and we were able to kind of take our game plan, talk to the coaching staff and just say, hey, this is what we're trying to implement and how we want to improve in these areas. So they ran practice and drills based on what we wanted to try to do for this fight. And you saw it firsthand. Like, we didn't want to really get in this engagement of wrestling, but we also wanted him to understand what our weight felt like. You know, if you fail in a shot, how does the weight feel when we sprawl out on top of you? How do we spin off the back? But more importantly, we're going to make your ass pay for coming in here. You don't get to come in here for free. So if I continue to shoot and it's a failed takedown and I don't get punished for it, I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to keep sticking my hand in the cookie jar. But if you get hit in the mouth for coming in here, we're going to make you pay and we're going to make you think about coming back in here again. So all of the thought process and all of the gamemanship and everything we try to implement on that very first takedown was very important for us. It's like, we're going to stop this shit now, but we're going to make you pay for it and not want to come back here again.
Fucking A, Eric, you're starting to sound like Belichick. Holy cow, this is some good stuff, man. And great shout out to the other coaches over at Extreme, Nate Pettit and Dennis Davis. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Goz here in a sec, but I did want to ask you one thing about, I had heard that story that you watched the fight since the beginning of the year, once per night before you went to bed. Did you, even on fight week, did you still catch a few things that late into the process that you didn't catch in January and February? Because if you did, then it was worth it, Eric Nixick.
Yeah, you know, during the fight week, I actually just started delving into more. You know, I watched all the Stipe's fights, but I started delving into more details on the Cormier stuff. Took a lot out of fight number two, actually, from Cormier and Stipe. I just think there was a lot more offense by Cormier in the second fight. With more tape, I can break down. I even went back and watched the Stefan Struve fight when Stipe got dropped. I looked at what happened with Overeem when Overeem dropped him out of the southpaw cross. Just trying to find patterns and see if there's any little thing that I can pick up on. Yeah, there was still some stuff even fight week that myself and Markel and Randy Farish was in the room with me. Some other little things that I picked up on. They didn't show their face in the fight, but you know, I had it in my back pocket if I needed it.
Eric, we were able to see your reaction as a coach, some of the other coaches, and even teammates on social media. We even saw Cameroon's reaction. But this fight in particular has been a family affair. Okay. Yeah. What was the family's reaction? Because I feel like for as much time as Francis Ngannou has spent with you in the gym, he's probably spent equal time with your family, being a family member. What was that family reaction like?
I felt it from here. You know, I felt it at the apex. They're all here at the house. You know, I just felt it, man. I just knew what it was going to be like in this environment, in this scene, especially with my crazy ass mom. You know, they all videotaped it. I saw like the eruption in the household. There's nothing better than knowing that your family supports this system, this machine of what we have. When you have everybody on board and everybody's rowing the boat in the same direction, you know, it's very important, especially when it comes to your family. Because like they're the most important part, and they buy in and they believe. They love him just as much as I do, and I think that's incredibly important to have when you have like what we have as a family, as a team. You know, my mom is really close with Dewey Cooper. You know, we're all one big happy family, and I think that's what is important, is to keep that same energy now that we won the title, that we have this family element. We keep that family tight, a tight closed circle, but. Yeah, man, you know, that victory, a lot of ways, goes to them. You know, my family sacrifices a lot for their dad and for their husband to be in the situation that I am. So, you know, it's nice to see them as happy as I was.
And Noxie boy got a shout out, too.
Oh, bro, this kid thinks he's famous now. Yes. Yeah, he's sleeping right now. He's up in he was actually sleeping on top of me, so I had to roll him off of me. But yeah, man, he literally thinks he's famous now. Yesterday, he was telling me that I had to go get his shoes because I'm his servant and he's famous. And then last night, I watched the fight for the first time here because I hadn't really seen the whole thing. And he kept asking me to fast forward to the part where Francis says his name. So this is going to be a definite issue.
He is famous. And he's Francis Ngannou's best friend.
Oh,
and
man.
So he is famous because Francis Ngannou is the baddest man on the planet. It's a great title to have. So yeah, Noxie boy is famous. Sorry, Goz. Go ahead.
Eric, I was going to ask you, you know, I know you're leaving on vacation now for a little bit. Well, when you get back and it comes to be bedtime, are you putting in a tape of John Jones, Derek Lewis, or even Stipe?
Well, since nothing's signed right now, you know, my attention goes to Jeremy Kennedy and Kai Kamaka and Maki. We all have fights coming up. You know, so those guys have been getting, you know, they're kind of the short end of the stick, if you will, from their coach's perspective. You know, I how involved I like to be. So Jeremy's got a big fight coming up in Bellator with Adam Boric. He comes from a great camp out of Sanford MMA. So I've been doing, you know, my homework on those guys as well. But now really my focus will center up on those guys. And then once Francis gets a deal signed, then, yeah, absolutely. The trend will restart for sure for me.
A lot of news coming out of the Extreme Couture camp, and one thing that was out there, Misha Tate's back. And I was just curious, I know you've had a previous relationship with Misha Tate helping her out. Will you be in the corner at all? Has she talked about who her team will be going forward?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I just told her whatever she needed. It's all hands on deck. I knew what her goals were when she came back to Vegas. You know, we kept everything under wraps. She came in the office and just sat down and said, hey, this is what I'm looking to do. You know, obviously being a mother, her body has changed a lot. She doesn't really know, you know, where she fit in the room yet. She wanted to get some sparring rounds in. So she really spent like 2 or 3 months just kind of seeing if this is actually something that she wants to do. She's one of my best friends, you know, and we're very close. And I'm there for her with whatever she needs. I don't care who she uses, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm in her corner whether I'm there or not, you know.
Eric, so I was joking earlier, but what were you saying when you were doing that to the camera? Do I have to wait until they have the that reaction video that they put? I forget what, but do I have to wait till or what? Because I couldn't make out any audio.
Yeah, I just said no more talking. I said no more talking, no more doubting, no more talking. You know, I definitely got my emotions, took the best of me in that moment. I think there was so much pressure on us all during fight week. You know, you hear a lot of the chatter, a lot of noise. You just try not to focus in on it, but it is engulfing. You know, people riding on you, telling you guys that, you know, you're not capable of winning. You're not being able to beat Stipe. You guys can't wrestle. You guys can't do this. You guys can't do that. And it was nice to shut those doubters up. And I think that moment was kind of like, you know what? This is our moment now. This is our time. So, you know, keep doubting us. That's what we need. You know, that doubt motivates me. I'm not built in the regards of if you want to talk shit, that I'm going to back down and not want to rise to the occasion. I need you to talk shit because that's what motivates me. I want to prove you guys wrong.
So that was a message to the haters that were coming at you. Was this like social media? They were blasting you? Was it Stipe fans or was it just fans in general that maybe don't have a liking to you, Jim, and Ngannou? Can you be more specific?
Whoever wants it, they can take it. I don't really care. But you know, there's doubters everywhere. There's doubters even in our own gym. You know, I've heard it. I heard it through the ranks. You know, there's doubters everywhere, and that's fine. I mean, you know, a lot of the criticism was fair, guys. Like, you know, people, hey, we haven't seen this guy wrestle. We haven't seen this. We haven't seen that. But it was the way it was delivered. A lot of times, it wasn't like oh, you know, we just haven't seen this yet. And this is what it was like. They can't. They won't. They this. They that. And that's where I just kind of like, you know what, man? Screw you guys. We're gonna prove you guys wrong. This guy's putting in all the work. These coaches work hard. Our training partners worked hard. You know, and everybody was just wanting this just as bad as myself and Francis. So just being able to prove those guys wrong, it was a good moment for us for sure.
How will this lift the gym? This is the first UFC champion you've had, I think, in about 4 years, if I'm not mistaken. You had a few of them compete for the title. They've come up a little short, but I think since Misha Tate, this might be the first one since her.
First one since Misha, yeah. So you know, just seeing that firsthand, what Misha brought back to the room, and just how important that was, because, you know, Misha did a great job of involving the entire gym, right? So you could have been just a member in the cardio kickboxing class. Misha made it a point to come and tell those people thank you, you know, because that love that she felt throughout the whole camp and then after winning the fight was imperative. Like, you can feel it, you know, and as a coaching staff and as a fighter, that's what you want. You want to feel like your team is behind you. And you have something you're fighting for. So being able to come back to the gym just brought so many good raw emotions for everybody involved, that everybody felt like they were a part of that win. So, and I think that's exactly the way Francis handles the situation too. He really loves that gym, that team. You see him bouncing around the kids' classes all the time. Like, some of my best friends I grew up with, all their kids train at my gym, and all those kids, you know, they just absolutely love Francis. So, yeah, it's gonna definitely you know, rising tide raises all ships. So yeah, it's definitely gonna bring a lot of notoriety and love and fanfare to the gym.
Have you talked to the founder of the gym, Randy Couture? This is a big one. This is, like I say, Misha was the last one, but there's been others, including Randy himself. Have you talked to him and Ryan and how they're feeling? Because again, the Extreme Couture gym, you know, is on the map again. You know, I'm not saying it ever left, but I'm saying with an actual champion from the top organization.
Oh yeah, I talked to him. I talked to him all week, actually. You know, and he's an invaluable resource for me. And sometimes, like, I forget how valuable he is to have an asset. He's been through all this stuff, so if I have any doubts, any questions, any thoughts, any concerns, or I just need a friend to talk to, I just reach out to Randy, you know, and what better resource to have than the Hall of Famer and a guy who's lived this life and been through it all. So there's areas that I will never understand that he helps me understand. But there was a moment there where, you know, I wanted to share with him, because the first time I ever walked into Extreme Couture, the very first time, Randy was getting ready for Tim Sylvia, and we won that title. You know, he won the heavyweight belt. He took that belt from Tim Sylvia. So this belt for me was very special, because it's come full circle. You know, I was a kid, didn't know anything really. He took me under his wing, and I went and got that belt back for him.
Man, that's awesome. And we're stoked for you, your family, the whole Team Ngannou, Extreme Couture. It was really, really an emotional night on Saturday night. I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you was, what were you feeling as a coach? What was your emotion? Well, I mean, you probably had a lot of emotions, but were you more scared, nervous, calm, confident? Like, what do you think you were the most as he entered and you guys were facing the greatest of all time for MMA heavyweight, Stipe Miocic?
I just had this weird tunnel vision, to be honest with you. I mean, I wish I had some sort of emotions, but I think, I don't know, man, it sounds weird, but I just get that, like, I don't know if you want to say serial killer moment, but I just zone right in, man. I don't see anything else but the job at hand and dead red. So, you know, winning it, there was obviously some emotions after, but for the most part, I just was kind of just going about my business and understand the task at hand and what we wanted to accomplish, you know. Oh, there's Noxie screaming away up there. Come here, Bubba. Come here.
You had that moment where you got to lift them. I mean, you experienced so much on Saturday night. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, it was the best feeling in the world, being able to pick that guy up and not throw my back out.
Yeah. I kind of did something similar with Frank Trigg in Icon in Hawaii when he beat Mayhem Miller. I was the first one in there, and I picked up Trigg. Didn't do a good job of it. His rib was hurting, and I just underestimated how heavy he gets after a weigh-in, but it kind of reminded me a little bit of it. Kind of reminded me a little bit of that.
Yeah, but Coach Frank reached out to me too, man. That was great to hear from Trigg. Trigg reached out to me right away, man. He's one of my good buddies. And, you know, he has been a pivotal role in me being the coach I am today. So when Trigg reached out, it was good to hear from that guy.
Is Noxie going to make a quick cameo?
Come here, Noxie boy. They want to meet you real quick. Come here, Bubba. You better hurry. You're famous, dude. All the people want to meet you. Well, then we got to go because they're on air. All right. Sorry, dude. You can't be famous anymore.
He'll be on the next one then. Hey, man, listen, family time is important. So enjoy your vacation and enjoy the fruits of your labor. You put in some hard work and you guys did it on Saturday night. Congratulations again.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys. And no place I'd rather be than here with you guys.
Thank you. All right. Take care, Eric. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Tell Misha I said hi.
Will do.
All right.
Later. All right, there you have it. And yes, she's ready to go. Misha Tate, former Strikeforce and UFC Bantamweight champ, current ONE Championship exec, and now returning to the Octagon. We'll catch up with her. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. And we're going to be joined by Misha Tate shortly. I know I saw her just a second ago, so it's just probably a matter of turning the camera on. She's back with the UFC, if you haven't heard. And she's got a fight lined up in July versus Marion Renault. There she is. Hi, Misha. How are you?
Hey. Guys, how are you guys?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. First of all, we wanted to pass on regards from Eric Nixick. He said a lot of nice things about you. We just let him go. He was in the corner of Francis Ngannou. I'm sure you saw that. Yeah. And we're talking about what a big moment this is for Extreme Couture. The last UFC champion they had was when you won your belt. So this is big for the gym. But, you know, if I can parlay that into a question, what do you think Francis is feeling? Do you recall your feelings like the Sunday and Monday after the buzz that you were on? And then I know you had a big special moment when you walked into the gym with that belt, but what do you think Francis is processing right now?
Oh man, I'm sure he's overwhelmed. I sent him a text and my first one, you know, he didn't respond to. And I knew, cause I know you get flooded, right? Like everybody wants to, you know, wish you congratulations or wants an interview or whatever it may be. And I think right now he's probably feeling very elated, but also very overwhelmed and trying to manage his time well. But it's also surreal. You know, it takes a little while for it to really sink in. I still feel like it took me probably about a week of waking up every morning and realizing that that wasn't a dream anymore, that it actually happened, you know? So I think he's probably going through quite a whirlwind of emotions.
Did it ever dawn on you like, hey, I'm the best at something in my particular weight class on this whole planet that has 7 billion people? I'm actually numero uno.
Yeah, actually that kind of dawned on me when I walked to the arena. You know, Holly was the champion, I was the challenger, and I said to myself, like, wow, I'm one of two people in this world going to do this right now, to be, you know, to try to become a world champion. And then it became, you know, one of one, like I'm the only world champion. And that was a pretty interesting way to look at it. You know, I don't know what the world population is, but when you sit back and think that, you know, you earn your spot to be the best at something, it's pretty cool moment.
You don't trust old George here? I just told you it's 7 billion, although I'm not sure on that, so don't quote me after all. But yeah, it is about 7 billion. That's a lot.
That's a lot of people. Wait, no, how many did you say?
I rounded up, but I think it's around 6 point something billion. So billion, like 6 and a half billion.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought you were saying million. I was like, no, I know it's not that. But yeah, that's a
– oh, whoa. If I did say million, then yeah, I was –
I definitely don't trust you if you're saying million, because I think it's some million people or something like that, and just in Singapore, and that's like the size of my pinky nail.
There's this chick that knows everything. Hold on a second. Siri, how many people are on this planet?
I thought you were gonna ask your wife.
No.
usually know everything. I don't know.
It looks like 7.8 billion. So it's even gone. I guess it's even closer to 8 billion.
Yeah.
Siri always comes through. Misha, later on that year, of course, you actually also finished with the sport, and I'm talking about 2016, and now you're back. That was one of the big announcements from last week, and it took us all kind of by surprise. And then I thought back to last week, I think it was last week, Goz and I had been at Extreme Couture. We saw you training, and, you know, we knew you were back in the USA, and we thought, just like a lot of the former pros that go in, like Jay Haran, he'll go in there. Martin Kampman, from time to time, when he's in town, he'll go in there. They get their workout on. Little did I know that was probably the beginning of maybe a camp. You probably didn't know who you were fighting, but you were already starting the process of returning to the sport.
Yeah, so since I moved back here, I've really been starting the process of returning back to the sport. And, I have 4 months, so I'm, you know, going to train twice a day, every day kind of thing. But we won't start the process of camp until probably about 10 weeks out, and I don't know exactly how to explain, like, but it shifts, like camp starts to narrow down, whittle away any of the extra things, you really start to hone in, and it's kind of like the buckle down time, right? So right now, you know, I'm just getting in there, getting back into that optimal fight shape, want to make sure to get my weight down like plenty in time. Be very prepared for camp, because camp is tough. The fight is fun. The camp is, I think, what we actually get paid for. So yeah, in a few more weeks, we'll be entering that heavy state of training.
Yeah, doing what you've done over at ONE Championship for so long, you've had a chance to be on the outside looking in. Are there any things that you can take from being on the outside looking in that maybe you didn't see while you were competing yourself that you can now bring into the table?
Absolutely. I think when you sit back and you analyze the sport, you learn so much. I think you watch, you know, the top UFC analysts, Michael Chiesa and, you know, Daniel Cormier and these guys, I think when they sit and they're forced to study the sport, it's really pretty incredible how much you can learn by just watching other people. I've learned a ton from watching Khabib. I've learned a ton from watching, I mean, Connor, like his striking style, Dustin Poirier. I sit back and I take these little tidbits and I take them, you know, take them to the training room and see what I can do and how I can mix them into my game. But yeah, absolutely. There is so much to be learned just by sitting back and being a spectator of the sport, somebody dissecting it from the outside.
I know there's going to be a lot of people that are going to ask you about that goal of becoming a champion again, and it's got to go through Amanda Nunes. But I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, of course she wants to do that one back. But what I didn't think about was how many people, when you made this announcement, that you've beaten, that probably say, I'd like to get back at her.
Oh, right.
Would that interest you? Some of those type of rematches where you were the victor. Maybe Holly Holm.
Yeah, I'm sure Holly would like to run that one back, and I'm sure we will. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we will. It would be really cool, you know, looking way into the future, right? If I was the champion and she was challenging me, right? That would be kind of interesting. But either way, I'm sure that will be something we'll run back at some point, and that's a fight that I'm very much looking forward to. I think I could do better, you know, I really do. And I know everybody thinks I'm so crazy because they're like, what is she doing? You know, taking 4 years off and coming back and thinking she could beat Amanda. But I've always been that way. Like, I'm always going to believe in myself. I'm always going to, you know, shoot for the moon. And if I miss, I land among the stars, right? That's just kind of my mentality going into this. And I have to believe in myself. And I really do. I'm excited to show you guys on July 17th because this is going to be Misha Tate 2.0. This is a different Misha Tate when I have a good support system behind myself. I'm not exhausted going into training camps. I'm not exhausted going into fights. I'm not depressed. I'm not, you know, have a good support like a lot of these other fighters do going into their training camps. And I just want to repeat what I can do when, you know, when I don't have all that. There's a lot of pressure on me for this. You're probably going to ask me about Miriam Renault. So I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead here or whatever, but you know, I know she's lost her last four, but they're very close losses. And everybody looks at like, oh, she lost her last four. That's a lot of pressure because she's not a shit fighter. She's not a bad fighter. She's a good fighter. She really is. And they're very closely contested losses a lot of the time. She submitted Sarah McMahon. She hurt her with a good right hand first. She she submitted Jessica Andrade with a triangle choke, right? I mean, she's done some really great things. She's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And all the losses, like, she's never finished, too. I mean, she's just tough. So I think people are like, oh, she's lost four. You know, Misha should smoke her. But, like, well, maybe they're not looking at it that way. I don't know. But I feel like that's what people are going to look at. Like, she better, you know? So I've just got to be really on point for this fight. You know, it's a must-win situation for me. I look at it the other way. Like, there is no other, you know, so I'm nose to the grindstone. And I want to show you what I did in the second part of my career.
Okay. Just want to make sure, did we lose our connection? Are you there?
Still here.
Okay, there she is. All right. Yeah, no, listen, we love Marion Renault. We're hearing this is going to be her last fight. But, yes, she is an educator, and we've often talked to her about that as well. So she has our utmost respect. This is a great matchup between the two of you. And, yeah, she's always competing no matter the result. She's always been a competitor. So, I mean, a lot of people are really, really excited about this fight. It made a big splash last week in the middle of an actual fight week on a week where Dustin Poirier was teasing his fight versus Conor McGregor. It looks like that's going to be said. Ben Askren, you know, doing the boxing thing. He's pretty popular. Yours had a nice reception as well. And hopefully you felt that from media and fans. It caught us from nowhere, but then I had to do a quick glance and say she's only 34, you know, and she is a lifelong fighter. So I don't see the return being difficult at all. In fact, if you can go back to these practices we were talking about, how's your body responded now you being the mother of two who hasn't fought in 4.5 years? How's the body holding up?
Good. It's not like I did nothing. Even during the pregnancies, you know, I made sure to maintain the shape. I had my son. It was in my mind that I wanted to come back. So sorry if I lied to any of you guys, but that down on the down. So it was a few times when people were asking me, you know, I think it, and I was like, no, that was a lie. But I feel really good. Like physically, I feel like the strength is coming back. And like my feedback from my training partners in the gym, you know, they're just like, damn, it's like you never left. So I feel really confident that I can get back in there and mix it up with them. I mean, it's a room full of killers at Extreme Couture. It is not a place where, you know, you can expect to just, I don't know. I mean, you can't just show up and have a bad day and not get your ass kicked. You know, like they're all very, very talented guys and gals in there. So me just going in there and doing what I've been doing, winning rounds, like I feel really good. And I feel strong. I don't know. I guess that is the thing. Like as you mature, like you gain strength. Maybe it's mom strength. I don't know, but I feel incredibly strong. And I think the most important thing is I feel refreshed. Like my head doesn't feel jumbled with so much information. It's just like my brain is processing things at a different level. Maybe it's maturity. Maybe it's just the time away that I had. Maybe it's just me feeling refreshed. I can't put my finger on it, but to answer your question, I feel pretty damn good. I don't know. What did you guys think? You guys were there on Monday. You guys saw me training. What was your impression?
Well, that was one of those, I call Eric Nixick Coach Lombardi, and when he has that whistle on, the proverbial whistle, and he runs you guys hard on Monday's practice, and you were hanging in there with all of them. So, yeah, you did very, very, very well, because that's one of the harder cardio practices that he does those Mondays.
It is. So, I mean, there you have it. So you guys are my witness, you know. I'm going to make a good return here.
We know you will. Hey, listen, I see you're still rocking the Evolve. I know you're still part of the ONE Championship family, and they got some big fights coming up. This is a big month for ONE Championship on TNT. In fact, their first fight card is coming off here with Adriano Moraes defending his bantamweight championship against Demetrius Johnson on TNT. It all starts on Wednesday, the 7th, and I wanted to see if we could just pick your brain on a couple of these fights. Starting with that one, the great Demetrius Johnson is now the challenger. We rarely see him in that spot. He's always defending, but he's going to be going against Adriano Moraes. Maybe a quick little breakdown of what we can expect for that one as ONE Championship now splashes in North America.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, Demetrius Johnson had to go through a murderer's row, really, to get this opportunity, and he had some of his toughest challenges, if you guys followed, like that Grand Prix to make him the number one contender. You know, he had some really tough fights on his hand, and he's definitely going to have a tough and Adriano Moraes because, Adriano's a black belt. And he, you know, not just black belt, he's a great fighter. I mean, he's been doing amazing things. He's a well-established champion of the division, but he feels a bit disrespected by the media, to be honest, because he's getting little to no love compared to Demetrius Johnson, who obviously is going to take the lion's share being, what I would consider the GOAT. But I think Adriano Moraes, you know, it's not only his belt, it's his legacy. It's the fact that people are underestimating him. You know, he wants to go in there and he wants to take that shine off of Demetrius Johnson, you know, keep his belt and beat the GOAT. So it's going to be a good scrap. I know Adriano feels a little bit disrespected in all of this, not by Demetrius Johnson, but just by the coverage that DJ gets versus him. So I think he's going to come out looking to make a real statement and prove everybody, you know, why they should have been talking more about Adriano Moraes. And obviously, I mean, do I even need to talk about Demetrius Johnson? I mean, he is just a phenomenal athlete, and I'm going to see, like, this is going to be one of his biggest challenges. Like, can he seal that legacy? Can he really, I think capturing a belt in another organization, that's something, it's like becoming a dual weight champion, you know, it's like you just, if you want to really add to those legacies and you want to build on that, well, that's what you're going to look to do, right? So here's Demetrius Johnson and Adriano Moraes, that'll be April 7th that they will be on that, you know, be fighting for the flyweight world champion, ONE Championship belt.
Yes, definitely. We'll be tuning in. And Adriano, we got some love for you. We've already booked Adriano for later in the week because, yeah, we got to get that kid some shine. He is the champion, and this is a big fight for him. And let's pivot to, you said a great scrap. You said a fighter that can win a belt in another organization. Eddie Alvarez has got himself a great scrap He's in there with Yuri Lapikus, who just came up short against Christian Lee in his bid to be a champion over at One Championship. But he's dusting himself off, and now he's taking on the Underground King. And Misha, check this out. Eddie's a former Bellator champ, former UFC champ. Can you imagine if he can add the One Championship belt? This fight right here, I'm sure if Eddie were to win, could possibly get him a shot versus Christian Lee, and it would go a long way for Lapikus to get a shot at the title as well.
Yes, so it's a very important, very pivotal fight for both of these guys. You know, Eddie Alvarez had a bit of a rough start. He actually got knocked out by Nastiukin, who will also be fighting on one of the ladder cards after this. But, you know, Yuri Lapikus was undefeated prior to Christian Lee in One Championship. And Christian Lee is the champion. And he can, I mean, Christian can wrestle, he can strike, he can do everything. So, you know, Yuri came up with just a little bit short, but he's very hungry. He's coming off of that loss to the champion, and he knows a win over Eddie Alvarez, right? Puts him right there as a contender. He wants to get that one back with Christian Lee. He wants to be the champion. And he said he's going to be the second guy to knock out Eddie Alvarez. So, I mean, I don't know if that will hold true, but there's only one way to find out, and that'll be to tune in for the fights, obviously. And, you know, Eddie Alvarez looking to, again, cement legacy. I think in this latter part of the sport, when you've accomplished so much like Eddie Alvarez, I mean, you're looking for things to keep you hungry and motivated in the sport, and to have a goal like capturing a belt, a championship belt in every major promotion. Like, talk about goals, right? These are big goals for him. So he knows this is a very important fight for him. And, no, I mean, his last fight, too, he looked really good. But he fights through adversity, and he's going to come and bring it. And, you know, this the way that I look at this is a number one contender eliminator fight.
Definitely. And lastly, One Championship is making kind of this card on TNT on Wednesday, April 7th, TNT One, it's called. They're making it a hybrid card. And they're also presenting Muay Thai bouts and kickboxing. And in one of those, Rutang Jitmunyong versus Jacob Smith, that one is for the Bantamweight Championship as well. That's the co-main event to Demetrius Johnson and Adriano Moraes. And then we have American Tyler Maguire versus Ramon Magomedaliev. I practiced, Misha, I swear to God. But can you talk about this?
I struggle cool. too. I really do. Struggle with these name pronunciations.
Exactly. Muay Thai and kickboxing in addition to MMA. That's awesome for the North American fans.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, look, Tyler Maguire, actually, I know personally, he's from Spokane. He trains with Rick Little, Juliana Pena's coach, and Michael Chiesa's coach, and also will be coaching myself moving forward. We're all from that Pacific Northwest kind of corn-fed tough folk up there, if you will. So Tyler Maguire, you know, he marches to the beat of the same drum as the rest of us. He's really tough, really strong, got the good wrestling, powerful guy, fought some of the best already in One Championship, come up a little short sometimes, but he's also won, and he's you know, he's a very, very tough guy. And then Rutang Jitmunyong, he is a different kind of animal. You got to watch him. Oh, and the Muay Thai fights, they have 4-ounce gloves. So,
oh yeah, that's right.
You almost can't even tell that it's you know, not an MMA fight, unless you're paying attention, right? You notice a lot of times they have the Muay Thai armbands and the Thai shorts, but it looks like an MMA fight until you see, like, they're only striking, which a lot of people really love. They get to see the most brutal part of the sport. And they're wearing 4-ounce gloves. He's killer. So Rutang is I wish you guys you have to watch. If you haven't seen him fight yet, then he's one of those guys that goes out there, and if he takes a shot, like, he's going to hit himself in the face. And he's just like, oh, he's just crazy. Like, he loves to fight. He'll put his chin out there and let you hit him. And then he'll beat you down for it. Like, he just, certifiably crazy, I would say. But in the best kind of way. So entertaining. I love watching this man fight. He's an absolute savage. He's a beast, and he's so good. There's not very many people, I would say, that can go out there and just be like, yeah, come on, hit me. I'm gonna put my hands down. I'm gonna flex. You're gonna hit me as hard as you can. I'm gonna give you two free, and then I'm gonna kick your ass for it. Like, that's Rutang. He's just a different kind of animal.
Can't wait for next Wednesday, April 7th, one championship on TNT. What a great splash they're going to have here in North America. And it's going to be four shows in April. Misha, you did a great job. Hopefully we can steal you for a couple more breakdowns for the other shows on TNT. But in the meantime, I know you got a practice to get to. As you start the comeback for your return to the Octagon versus Marion Renault in July, we want to wish you the best of luck with that. And as always, thank you for your time here on MMA Junkie Radio. Outstanding job as always. We'll talk to you soon. I'm sure we'll see you at Extreme Couture later on.
Absolutely. See you guys soon.
All right. Take care. All right. There you have it, folks. That's Misha Tate, former Strikeforce and UFC bantamweight champ, current ONE exec. And now she's returning to the Octagon in July. Huge announcement this past weekend. Well received by many as well.
Yeah, these are exciting times, aren't they?
They are. Goes one on TNT is going to be big. And in April, PFL comes back as well. And Bellator, as you know, I'm part of the rankings panel. They're heating up their shows. We got the great Pitbull, they're one of their champs. He's in action as well. So a lot of stuff that's going to be turning on here this week. Even though the UFC's off, there's going to be a lot of shows. I think CFFC's got a double. John Morgan's on the call over there. But a lot of MMA and combat sports in general, you know, boxing's never cold either. So if you like combat sports, this is a great time.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, everything's heating up. It's like that almost like that one weird time of the year in pro sports where all of the big dogs are going at the same time. You only get it for like a little while. That's what it feels like right now.
You know, when I think of PFL, this is going to sound totally silly, but one of the last things I remember, other than their big fight night that they have on December 31st every year, was you and I were at the Mandalay Bay, and we were watching two fights in one night. Remember when Ray Cooper came out, and he had a great night, and he had the loud crowd, and moments later, our good friend of the show, Dr. Steve Kim, asked, goes, hey, when are you going to get your wisdom teeth taken out? And goes said, yeah, you know, I need to get in there soon, you know. And I think Dr. Kim said, how about tomorrow? And goes is in the middle of drinking, you know, a Coke or something. And he just kind of, I think he's thinking it over. I think Dr. Kim came at him so quick that he didn't have enough time to say like, oh, gee, I got this appointment, or we got this interview scheduled. He just goes, just kind of looked at me like, what do I do? But then the other half was like, sure, but George, will you drive me there? Because all four of them were going to come out. And yeah, 24 hours later, Goz is on his bed with a bunch of cotton in his mouth, bleeding. And he was basically out of it for 1 week, all because of Dr. Steve Kim over there at Hollywood Smile, it's called, in Las Vegas. You've seen, if you follow him on Instagram, you see a lot of fighters go in there. But what a nice guy for him to assist you in that. He made it happen so quick. But that was literally one of my last PFL memories, honestly.
Our boss, Chris, had a little hand in that too, because he threw in a no time like the present goes or something like that. Like, as soon as it happened, you guys kind of just got bigger and I shrunk. And yeah, next thing you know, I mean, it's not even like you could say, you know, I had all day to think about it. It was like early the next morning. I was right back. I was right there and they were doing it. And he did it quick, man. I've assisted in a lot of those procedures. And he did it in about, I want to say, 11 minutes. And I had impacted one.
Must have a good technique. Yeah.
Strong forearms.
Yeah. I mean, when you get a text like, hey, on Friday, what do you think? You know, you have enough time to look at it and go, oh, well, you can even ask someone, what should I tell them? You know, or you can think of it or whatever. But literally, Dr. Kim just put his arm around him and goes, when are you going to take care of this, you know? And then goes, I don't know. And then he just goes, how about tomorrow at 8:30 a.m., you know? I mean, literally, arm on him. It was like a Duke full court press. Me and Chris and Chris's friend were there. And yeah, Chris is egging him on. And like I say, 24 hours later, this guy's just sitting up on the bed because he couldn't fall over. Otherwise, he'd choke on blood. And he was out of it for at least 48 hours, right?
Yeah, at least. That was a rough one. I mean, it was good in the sense of everything he did was good, but just not really being prepared, like not having your Pedialyte and stuff like that. You know, it was just the last thing you would think is you're going into a surgery the next morning.
Yeah. All right, listen, we got a few minutes left. We got about 10 left here. Let's go over this card. Francis Ngannou defeated Stipe Miocic. We've talked a little bit about that with Eric Nixick. If you didn't catch that interview, we just ended with Misha Tate as well. Here on our channel, sportscaster.com/MMA junkie, all of our shows are right below. All you got to do is scroll down, and this show will be right ready for you to download and check out for all of you that like to watch the video. Of course, the MMA Junkie Radio podcast has been around for 14 years, but yeah, we are here 2 times a week doing the show, and you can watch us live on video, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, so give us a follow. That way you're always notified as to when we're on. And also, thank you to Sportscaster and all the viewers and listeners of last Saturday's UFC 260 Watch Along. That's how Goz and I watch the fights, along with many others that tuned in. So hopefully you all had a good time. We had some Gozy twos. I had a slight headache on Sunday, but it was a blast. But before Ngannou and Miocic, Vicente Luque and Tyron Woodley, Goz, these guys, man, they didn't get out of the first round, but boy, did they go at it.
They did. Tyron Woodley did what he's been saying he's going to do for a lot of fights. You know, he would come back and he'd have that type of performance, and he would say, well, I don't know what it is, but I need to learn how to let myself go. And then he'd come back and he'd kind of do the same thing again. So this time around, when he's saying those things, you kind of just think, I just feel like maybe you don't want to do that. He did it in this fight. It was big and he had his moment. But Vicente Luque stuck around and he had his moment. I mean, it was a back and forth fight. Tyron, I think, can be frustrated at the way that the fight ended. But I think there is a silver lining in the fact that whatever he did to mentally prepare himself to just let himself go and do his thing, he finally was able to do it.
I hope he stays. Maybe he could take it one contract at a time and just see. But he has lost 4 in a row. I'm sure he gets paid well. I never felt like he loves the UFC and the UFC loves him, but I don't think you can say the word hate either. And the way he fought, look, they thought enough of him that they gave him 50 grand, but the way he fought, if he can fight like that, he'll just always be somebody that you can feature, you know, on a fight night or on a pay-per-view. So keep him around if he wants to keep fighting, but I thought he passed the test, honestly. That said, do I have a feeling in my stomach that he probably won't be back? Kind of, because of Dana White's response at the post-fight press conference, which, again, is available on MMA Junkie. If you go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo, all the videos there that we do are available, including this show, including Spinning Back Kick Click, which we taped earlier. It's all there. He addresses it, Dana White, and it didn't sound favorable, but we'll see. We'll see if he can make it happen. Perhaps he can be a fill-in where he helps the UFC out of a bind and he's ready to turn it around, because he did take some shots, but as long as his head is clear, he got submitted, not knocked out. Although it did kind of look at times that he was maybe out of it on his feet. But he kept cracking. He kept cracking all the way to the end, and he almost had Luque early on. But, you know, he's going to be 39 in about a week or so. So we'll see. We'll see what's left. But I have no problem with him staying. Of course, his options are bare knuckle. Bellator has a good welterweight division. And he fought for Scott Coker before when he fought at Strikeforce. He fought for the Strikeforce title once. He lost to Nate Marquardt, but that was a good fight too. PFL already is beginning the process of getting their season going. But I suppose if you were a standby guy, maybe they could bring you in if somebody were to not be able to fight, you know, and that would keep him busy. And there's a $1 million prize at the end. He's a former wrestler, so I think he's used to that format of fighting often if he wants to sign up for it. And then, of course, one championship is always an option. You know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how he wants to take it. But I don't know. Oh, I don't know if he'll fight in the UFC again. In the featured bout, we had Sean O'Malley defeat Thomas Almeida. It was just a matter of time. Probably if he didn't do a couple of them walk-offs, maybe he would have got the job done a little bit earlier. But in the end, he did get Thomas Almeida in round 3. Are you a believer in Sean O'Malley? He goes, can this guy be a world champion one day?
World champion is a little different. Believer, as far as being a contender, a tough out, yeah, I do. I just don't know how this fight was one with a lot of aggression, a lot of chance taking. And as you get higher in the ranks, those are guys that are going to make you pay for things like that. If you don't land that shot, if you miss, they will make you pay. There are killers in that division. So I don't know if I could say he's going to win a title. Actually, I'll probably lean more towards no right now. But I need to see more of him and consistency, because we see he's had some pretty bad injuries too in his career so far. So we got to see how that goes. But right now, I'd say he's showing promise. He's still there, but I don't know that we can pin him up with some of the top dogs there.
And because he's tall and wiry, sometimes it does look like when he gets kicked in the leg and his leg kind of bends a little ways, I think we're falling in the trap of like, ooh, did he hurt his knee? Did he twist an ankle? But he seemed pretty durable on Saturday night. Towards the end, he was still throwing his spinning back kicks. He's got some real nice strikes, man. A lot of great kicks. I've seen his hands develop, and his hands are becoming formidable. And with that reach and his ability to cover distance and his endless cardio, I think he can be a beast. But, you know, we still need to see him, I think, against a top test. The highest test he's had, I guess, were Marlon Vera, and that was his one loss. So he still needs to get past those ranked guys, I think, before some of us become believers. But he made an incredible splash on Dana White Contender Series, so we've been excited for him for a while now. In the meantime, he got the job done. So did Miranda Maverick. She defeated Jillian Robertson via decision. Jamie Malarkey defeated Kama Worthy. Beautiful, beautiful strikes there. That fight ended in the first round, so it kicked off the pay-per-view rather quickly. Alonzo Minifield defeated Fabio Charrant via a Von Flu choke. Ababukar Nurmagomedov defeated Jared Gordon. Decision there. Michelle Olesik defeated Modestas Bukauskas via split decision. I thought Bukauskas may have gotten him, and I bet Olek. So I was relieved, because I really thought Bukauskas was going to get his name called, but you never know what the judges. Omar Morales defeated Shane Young. Marc-Andre Barrio defeated Abu Azatar, which, by the way, I thought that fight had a good chance of being fight of the night. But it was so early in the night, who knows? But I thought they were going to get some love. But here are the bonuses. The fight of the night went to Woodley and Luque, as I mentioned earlier. Francis Ngannou and Sean O'Malley got performance of the night bonuses. So there you have it. That's kind of the recap of UFC 260. Now, I blasted through a few of those fight results, goes, but any thoughts on some of those fights or any of those names I mentioned there on the recap?
Just the one that sticks out the most is Sean O'Malley. What's going to happen with him? You know, what is next in that progression? Because he had a decent aim and he dispatched of him. So he's got to move up. And as he moves up, it's going to be more challenging. I want to see what happens with him. And then that's like the cool thing of this fight card, is when you look it over, like Vicente Luque, Sean O'Malley, and then just the cluster at the very top with Francis Ngannou, all the options that he has to do now. It's made for a lot of interesting storylines going out of this card.
Yeah. We saw a Nurmi not want to wrestle hardly at all. He was kickboxing. Morales looked pretty good. But, yeah, and even Miranda Maverick, she just seems so strong, like a physical specimen. Even times when Jillian Robertson had her back, she couldn't get hooks in. Like, she just, the other girl looks so strong. So the promise is good on Miranda Maverick. But see, a lot of these fighters are just starting off. So we'll see. Good to see Alonzo Minifield back in the win column. And the Von Flu choke is rare, but when it happens, it's pretty cool to watch. And yes, folks, that was only 10 fights that they had on Saturday, because a few of them were lost throughout the week. Some are going to be reshuffled. Still don't know about Volkanovski versus Ortega. That one was missed as the fight day was slowly approaching, as the fights were unfolding. But I'll tell you what, O'Malley kept it fun. Luque and Woodley collided, and then the heavyweights just really, really brought it. I mean, particularly Ngannou, because it was kind of one-sided. But Miocic had that one moment where he cracked him for a sec. So you were on the edge of your seat. But I'm telling you, guys, when it was over, I was a happy camper for that fight card, which was only 10 fights, and we had lost the other title fight. But that just goes to show you that when a show closes strong with its co-main and its main event, that, you know, you can feel pretty satisfied.
Yeah, overall, I think the card was great. You're right. I mean, who's not going to miss? It's not just the fact that it's a title fight. It's an interesting fight. we see Brian Ortega and the changes that he's made. It's made it very interesting, but you know, we're going to see it sooner than later, I think. And we'll get it back, but that card definitely delivered.
Definitely. All right. We're going to get on out of here. I want to thank our guest, Eric Nixick, who was in the corner of Francis Ngannou when Ngannou defeated Stipe Miocic. He's also the general manager at the world famous Extreme Couture Gym here in Las Vegas. Great guy. Great moment for him. I want to thank Misha Tate for her time. She's still with ONE Championship. We broke down the upcoming ONE Championship, or ONE on TNT, ONE card is what it's called, that's coming up. And then we also talked a little bit about her return. She also has an interview up on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. And she addresses a little bit more of the questions about what brought her back and the moment she knew she wanted to come back and, you know, what her plans are, because she has a 6-fight contract still. See, when you leave the UFC, if you retire, that contract is still frozen. So like Khabib, whatever contract he's on, even though he's gone, if he were to come back, he can't just say, you know what, I think I'm going to box De La Hoya. He's got a UFC contract that he has to honor first, unless they let you go. So Misha's on a 6-fight contract. Now, is she going to fight all 6? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure she'll take it one by one, but she's got the 6-fight contract, and she says it's not for the money. She just wants to fucking fight. So we'll see how it goes versus Marion Renault, who announced this will be her final fight. So interesting there. So thank you to both of them. Thank you all for tuning in here. We'll be back on Thursday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. And thanks to all of you who tuned in to our watch along this past Saturday. It was a blast. We hope to be back for 261. 3 title fights, including Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal. And boy, are we going to make a run at trying to convince Sportscaster to see if they'll let us do that trailer card, because Askren and Jake Paul, they were in Vegas this past weekend, and there was a little pushing and shoving going on there. Frank Mir's also on the card, so I think that might be a fun one to do as well. So we'll see if we can make a push to do 2 watch-alongs this month. Anyway, for now, we're out of here, and we'll talk to you soon. Go out there and be a champion.